pew 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 pew.
Daylight savings can go fuck itself.
Yeah, it can. It can go fuck itself. It's the dumbest thing
ever. It's essentially 7 in the morning right now.
Here's the thing. This made sense way back in the day when your life revolved around farming.
Shenanigans.
And now it's...
No, it does shenanigans.
Not. It's shenanigans.
No, I don't give... No. I grew up on a farm. Kind of. Like, my family owned a huge one, and I had to go help every other weekend. So, no. Shenanigans. Just, you get up when the fucking sun gets up.
Right.
It's not... It doesn't help farmers. Like, it's the biggest crock of shit. Actually, I think it was supposed to be... It was poor science, but somebody said it's a conservation thing for energy during World War One.
Oh, is that what it was?
That's what it was. But it's so poorly backed, there's a whole bunch of states that don't observe it now.
No.
Yeah, there are. There's more and more.
One.
No, Arizona doesn't observe it.
Yes.
There are two major cities in Indiana that don't observe it.
Yeah. It used to be half the state didn't, and then, or the state didn't, and then that changed.
Almost every single Native American reservation in the United States doesn't observe it.
Well,
that's... Because they rise and fall with the sun in those communities,
right.
You know, which just proves that this is bull. Yeah, fuck you, daylight savings time. Yeah.
It's a completely man-made.
I'm over it. I want to know if any other countries do it, and so I guarantee they don't.
No, they do.
Who else? Who else is this fucking stupid?
No, I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
It's stupid.
I'm thinking of when I was in the Navy. Of course, we did it on the ship. Ship time was different. But yeah, you know, maybe not.
Fucking
who fucking knows? Anyway, did you sleep?
Ish.
Did you dream of electric sheep?
I'll get out of here. We did Blade Runner this week.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, and welcome to the Negative One podcast, where we make each other watch that shit that you
the
get
thing.
Screamed about at parties. Blade Runner was what I wanted the very first set of episodes of the show to be.
Yeah.
And then you went a weird way on me because you did Ghostbusters, and then I gave you Frankenhooker because we have to redo that episode because it's terrible.
No.
And then you curveballed it, and we went Spirited Away, where
yes.
I really thought that Blade Runner would either be our first anniversary.
I got a set. I mean, there's got to be some stuff that's big that I set aside to for
our 2-year anniversary is coming up, and I can't wait to see all the flack that you get for your assignment for the 2-year anniversary.
Here's the thing. I'm afraid of watching whatever the thing is before. There's a couple of movies that I have on reserve that I'm like, oh, I should watch that, and I don't because I know that eventually it's coming. And it gets really frustrating when that happens, and then it goes away from Netflix, and I'm like, yeah, now I'm going to
have
to go
rent
it.
You mean like Blade Runner, which I had to buy for this fucking podcast?
Well, I didn't know that it was ever on Netflix.
It was.
I found out.
Yeah, Final Cut was on Netflix for a solid minute, and then it got taken down a couple months ago.
You know why? Because the sequel, right?
Yep.
Which is dumb. Like, leave it up for the buzz.
Well, that's what they did with Ghostbusters. That's exactly what they did with Ghostbusters, because they pulled it as soon as they announced.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say it didn't come back up.
Yeah, as soon as they announced they were doing the remake, that shit got pulled.
Yeah, I don't know why they do that, except for maybe the studios wanting to pull it from stuff like that so that they can get some money from people going out and renting or buying the original, which, let's be honest, you're not going to do that.
Stop it.
Yeah. It'll be on some cable channel somewhere.
You mean to tell me that the most convenient thing that makes people pay attention to your studio's property, you're just going to pull it?
Right. So
to generate buzz? You're a fucking idiot.
Yeah, I would tend to agree that that is the dumbest thing ever. But yeah, Blade Runner.
Yep.
Pew pew and all that.
Yeah.
Sort of.
There's not a lot of pew pew.
There's no pew pew. Like, there's no pew pew. There's some bang bang. And not a ton of that.
We're going to have interesting conversations today.
We're
going to have a conversation about car doors. We're going to have a conversation about Chinatown.
Chinatown, yeah.
We're going to have a conversation about neon lights. They're timeless, Thomas. We're going to have a discussion about future technology in old movies, like retro future. We're going to have a nice discussion about that.
Because keep in mind, that movie takes place in 2019, which is 2 years from now. Where's my dystopian future? Oh, wait. We elected him. sorry, not to get political.
Oh, buddy. it's not my fault. Third party. I don't know.
But what have you been up to?
So part of the reason I'm real tired is that last night was the second night in a row that I stayed up drinking until like 2:30 or 3 in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
For Christmas, we got tickets to a comedy show for my brother-in-law.
Mm.
And he got us 2 tickets to go see Mike Birbiglia.
Birbigs
is a master of his craft.
I love Mike Birbiglia.
He doesn't get celebrated enough, but he does get celebrated a lot.
Yeah.
He truly is a master. I put him up there with... It was funny before the podcast started, you said, oh, it's amazing
he's
how good he is
clean.
For a clean comedian. He is somewhere in between Louis and Brian Regan. Because Brian Regan is the grandmaster of clean comedy. It doesn't get any better than Brian Regan. Mike Birbiglia is just as much of a master, but he straddles this weird absurdist line and randomly will get dirty just for a hair.
I feel like Gaffigan does that too.
He randomly gets dirty, like a hair dirty, like, you know, a pube in your mouth dirty.
Yeah, I get you.
Yeah, it's a terrible joke.
Easy joke.
He just put up Thank God for Jokes on Netflix.
Yes,
and I watched it. We both watched it, and I was like, oh shit, I hope he's got his material fleshed out. The tour we're going on.
Yeah.
To see is new material.
Yeah.
Or it's limited amounts, and he's working on a ton of new stuff. We showed up, and he had a whole new hour.
Yeah.
And what blew my mind, and I finally respect Mike Birbiglia as a master, because I love all of his specials. My Girlfriend's Boyfriend, Sleepwalk With Me. His Comedy Central Presents is actually the first time I ever saw him.
Yep.
And I've been a fan since then. What do you think my background should be? I don't know. We'll put up something that you fear most so you can get comfortable. So I put up a bear. goodbye. Like, I've liked him for a long time. Thank God for Jokes is amazing.
Is it? I'm not.
The hour I just saw 48 hours ago is so far superior, and he just started working on it.
Yeah.
And I've never seen anything like that. It just, I mean, he recorded that special in like November and it's March, and he's got another hour. He has another hour that skewers you to your soul, and then you cannot stop laughing.
That's the funny thing about stand-ups and doing tours is that they do their hour, and then when they're doing a special, the special is usually at the very end of a tour. So they get that entire tour to kind of workshop and hone.
Yeah, but then they only have the editing time of that special before release date to put the new hour together.
Right, and they put it out, and then usually they hang back a little while they write new material. And this isn't the first time that I've heard Birbiglia doing this. Now,
he does things from his journal too, which means that he's got like an arc. He knows what he's going to do probably the next 2 or 3specials.
And he's a regular on like Bob and Tom, where he does workshop a lot of his jokes. So that's why he comes off so quick-witted, because he's been working on this stuff forever.
Yeah.
That's where I not ran into him. That's where I found out about him, was listening to him be a frequent guest on Bob and Tom. Back when I listened to Bob and Tom every morning, because I was in my car or truck all day. So I've been a fan of him forever. Now, I've not finished Sleepwalk With Me was the movie.
Well, right? He has a special called that too.
Oh, okay.
And actually the CD was recorded here in Cincinnati at the club we were at.
Oh, cool.
His whole first like 5 minutes was just about Cincinnati this time around.
So were you at Funny Bone or
Go Bananas?
Go Bananas. Oh, he was at Go Bananas?
Yeah, none of the bigger comedians are the ones ever that are in the loop. Well, no, actually, most all of them go to Go Bananas and won't go to Funny Bone anymore.
Oh, really?
Yeah, most of them won't go to Funny Bone anymore.
I know.
The only big guy that still goes to Funny Bone is Bill Burr. Bill Burr, for some reason, has a relationship with those people.
Mm-hmm.
So he still workshops his stuff down at Funny Bone.
I've been to Funny Bone twice, and I saw Jim Norton, and I think I saw Carrot Top, which was surreal because I don't like Carrot Top. There's nothing wrong with him. It's just not my kind of comedy.
I don't know why he started getting shit on.
Or no, I'm sorry. It wasn't Carrot Top. My apologies. It was Pauly Shore. That's how memorable that was.
You're so memorable.
Yeah.
That I confused you with that.
With another.
With that.
Yeah.
carrot top
person.
Man.
But I love I love Go Bananas, which is a small, literal hole in the wall type comedy shop.
But it's right. Like, there's a speaker in every corner of the room.
Yeah.
The room is shaped
weird,
rectangularly wide from the stage instead of back from the stage, so that it kind of curls around the thing. It's got a brick wall. Like,
If you
have ever watched Louis,
yeah,
imagine his intros and monologues are even more tiny and intimate than that.
Yep.
But you can fit twice as many people, and it's really weird. But Go Bananas is, there's four people on the wait staff, and that room sold out, can hold 550 people.
Yep.
They will serve the entire room with four servers.
Yep.
One taking
orders.
They're
so good.
One taking orders, one running food, one running beer, one helping with anything that needs to be helped with. And they'll run the whole fucking night for 4 hours. It's unbelievable. They have it so well together there. But I love that comedy club.
Now, when you go to Go Bananas, do you show up at 7?
No. So usually
When we go, we show up at 7.
This is how you know I'm a comedy nerd.
Uh-huh.
I like Sunday evening shows.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like going on Fridays and Saturdays because they're just going to do their stuff. I like going on Sunday when they already know if they've made their money. They already know what the turnout's been like. They've already got a gauge on the city and the crowds and the emotions and all that kind of stuff and how they want to talk about it. And frankly, it's their last day in town and they don't give a fuck. Like, as soon as this is over, they're either going to go to bed or they're going to start going home.
Mm-hmm.
So they tend to be exhausted. They tend to go off script. They tend to workshop new stuff. It's low risk, and the reward has already been delivered. So I like going to Sunday night shows. I like seeing that. I like seeing things out of their element.
I
saw Drew Hastings.
I like Drew Hastings. Yeah. I'm thinking trying to see somebody who's that zany off script.
It was great because he started just having conversations because the room was pretty small.
Yeah.
But he had already had a good weekend. So he's like, well, I mean, it's an audience of 30 people. I don't care if I piss you people off. Let's do this. And he was just picking people out and having conversations. And so he was going around the room because Bernie and Hillary were still locked in it.
Mm-hmm.
And then he's a political guy. Like, he's a mayor of Hillsborough, Ohio.
Yeah, there's a whole thing about that, by the way.
But he started getting into it with someone in the audience who was a Bernie supporter and just said, look, I get it. I get what you think you're being sold.
Mm-hmm.
But let's talk about why you're also being sold some bullshit, even though Uncle Bernie's the holistic social guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he got into it. And as soon as he felt that kid was shut down and doesn't want the comedian after him anymore, he then forayed into one of the best jokes I've ever heard in my entire life. It was, I like that. I like the pure chaos and the no. Yeah. But, so on those nights, I'll show up at 7, but it's not the same because I'm going to the nobody cares night.
Right. The energy is different. And like you said, if there's 30 or 50 people in there, for me, that's just sad.
No, I like those shows. If there were 30 to 50 on a Friday primetime slot,
that's sad.
I'd be bummed out.
We go Friday nights usually because we live so far away from that particular place that it only makes sense if we're coming from work. We usually only go when we're comped. I'm not going to lie, unless it's somebody that we really want to go. Yeah. But it is one of my favorite places to go. I could do that every weekend. I really could.
Yeah.
We would never go on a Sunday because we work Mondays. And like, I don't like to go out if I have to work the next day. It's just how I am.
I'm up till 2, 3, 4 in the morning, no matter what. So fuck it.
The difference
is how hard I'm still drinking at 1:30 and 2 o'clock.
Well, speaking of, so my week has been, not that you've asked, you've already know, has been medically induced. We've had a lot of medical issues on my wife's side of the family. So my life has been visiting people in hospitals, taking care of other people's dogs, and sleeping alone.
So, Thomas, what's the best food
Jello.
At that hospital?
Jello.
Jello's the best food
always
at that hospital.
The best food in
I
any
figure
hospital.
By now you're probably an expert at the menu.
The nice thing is, so it's B North is where they were. They're out now, thank God. But the food's not bad. It's just a little bland.
Well, it's hospital food,
right? And I get that. So it's really not bad. I mean, I've had worse hospital food.
I like to think that they keep the food bland so that you don't start questioning what they put in it. It's like if you go to a taco joint that's just a little too good. Like, what the fuck's in these tacos?
That would be Jack in the Box tacos. What, with the taupe meat.
All right. That meat is beige.
It's taupe.
Son of a bitch, if that's not good. Like, the tacos are good. They're good. They're good, Thomas. They're good. I can't figure it out. I don't know why. I've just resigned to the fact that something about Jack in the Box tacos just works. Jack, you keep it up, you weird white-headed man.
Yeah, so a lot of visiting hospitals, a lot of...
You said which hospital has the best food?
Children's in Cincinnati. Oh,
well, dude, they can't fuck that up.
No.
They're not allowed to fuck that up.
I've been to Children's with my kids for more than one day at a time, three times in my life, and all three times that is something that I've been there very grateful for is...
Yeah.
Not just like the fact that they have a La Rosa's and a Skyline there, but just their regular hospital food is on point. Like, yeah, well, I would just go there for lunch.
I've done volunteer work at Children's Hospital before, mm-hmm. and they talk a lot about the concept that they have around food. I mean, you're talking about one of the top medical centers for sick kids in the world, mm-hmm. and 50% of the parents are there and are terrified because their baby is in the hospital. Mm-hmm. Like, that's, you have to think about the fact that if that were your situation and you went downstairs.
You have to have something comforting.
And you had fucking beige tacos sitting staring you in the face. You're liable to.
Okay. I hate everything.
The food has got to be on point. Because yes. It basically is the last line of comfort. You have.
Oh, yeah.
It's you're in the cafeteria. When you're done in the cafeteria, you get to go watch your child suffer some more.
Right.
So the meatloaf better be fucking good.
And it is. It really, literally is. Yeah. So that's been my life.
Hospitals.
Yeah. So Lindsay was staying at her parents to help her mom because
you were so bored this week,
and I was at home. Like, yeah, I would work. I'd come home to an empty house. I would text Lindsay, and you know, play on my phone. That has been it all week, and take care of the dogs.
Did you see the video of that little girl getting blown with that screen door?
No.
So Ohio got hit this week with some really vicious thunderstorms. They were bad. I mean, it's like 7 inches of water in 2 hours.
Yeah, yeah, that happened. It was insane. Yeah, it was pretty bad.
And the winds were going 60, 70 miles an hour. There were a couple tornadoes, blah, blah, blah. There's a video of a little girl... From this week, since you were doping around on the internet, I can't believe I haven't seen it.
Yeah.
She walks up the driveway, mm-hmm. and her mom's back by the car. So this little girl opens the glass screen door of the house, and the wind catches it. And so she holds the handle for dear life, and the thing just goes woof and swings all the way open and flings her into the garage door. Oh, my God. It's
amazing. How did I not see it? She was okay?
The whole time she's holding like a Galaxy Note in her hand, and she doesn't drop it. I'm like... That chick is so ready to be a preteen, it's not even funny.
Well, it could have blown up in her hand, so there's that.
Yeah.
So Blade Runner. Yeah.
I actually thought, while I was getting set up today, I can't exactly explain why I haven't seen Blade Runner. And I want to say...
I'm surprised, honestly.
Well, I want to say that this isn't my dad's ballpark, and so my dad didn't actually get me into sci-fi. I mean, you have to...
Not quite your dad's tempo?
No, and like my dad didn't get me into Star Wars. I had a sleepover with a friend in first grade.
I'm sure you did.
And it's funny, I was just talking to somebody about this because I was trying to talk about how the end of Gravity Falls feels. For anybody who's watched the show Gravity Falls, they just end the show.
Yeah, you mentioned that a couple weeks ago.
They decided to walk away. He said, this is exactly what I wanted to tell. It's a full story arc. It's over. And they pretty much pack onto a bus and go back home to go to school for the fall. And that
makes sense.
The ending of that show, I only ever really had one good friend through grade school, middle school, right? I mean, I didn't have any friends. And it was in first grade. And this is the kid I had a sleepover. He introduced me to Star Wars. We hung out all the time.
You blew each other.
6 months into being friends, he moves to Arkansas. I still have not heard from him again to this very day.
Look him up.
That's I what cannot Facebook find him.
This for
cannot oh. find him.
Good.
Yeah. But that's how Gravity Falls ending felt.
Oh.
I'm just going to introduce you to Star Wars. Be your best buddy. Goodbye forever.
I had a friend like that in high school. I had her name was Liz, and she was my best friend at the time. When I was that age, I didn't understand the difference between being having feelings for someone being your friend of the opposite gender and having feelings for someone. So I made some missteps, but we were friends up through high school. When I was in the Navy, when I came back from the Navy after everything happened, she was still living where she was. And then she got married to someone I didn't know and disappeared. Like, we've not had any contact. I still talk to her sister. I talk to her brother's wife, who was somebody I knew from high school. I just somebody I don't have any contact with. She's not on Facebook or Twitter or anything, which is weird to me, but I understand. But I have the same kind of feeling like, oh, you're just disappeared. It's like you're dead. Okay.
There's a chunk of my life that's gone.
Yeah.
At least it was animated well. he was the kid who introduced me to sci-fi stuff. Like, my dad didn't even know I liked Star Wars until I started buying Star Wars toys. He goes, where the fuck did you watch that? Like, where did you even get into this?
So is your dad not a sci-fi guy?
I wouldn't say he's not.
I would have assumed he was in the few.
But he's more of a Western guy and a war movie guy. And he's not, I don't know, but Blade Runner never came up.
Yeah, okay.
It never came up. And so then when I got older and I got into sci-fi stuff, and I hear people nerd out over it. Which we'll talk about that in a second.
Uh-huh. Ridley Scott.
That's another thing that I kind of didn't give this credit for in the back of my head. But
all right, let's...
I don't know that any other method could have been used to make me watch this except for this podcast. Like, no one in my life is a fanatic about it.
And it is dated.
It's very dated.
Yep.
Not in a bad way.
No.
But it's retro future, like I said. We're probably going to talk about that heavily. You're either in the Blade Runner boat or you're not in the Blade Runner boat.
Well, I don't know if I would say that. I would say that if it wasn't for the sequel and if it wasn't for, well, this podcast for forcing you to do it, you probably would have seen it. If you were scrolling through channels.
But I'm telling you, it probably wouldn't have happened for another 5 years. It really wouldn't. The only thing that might have pushed me is that I know that the director of Arrival is doing the sequel to Blade Runner. Mm-hmm. And Harrison Ford is on board.
2049.
I don't know. Oh, we could talk about Arrival for a split second. Because you and I had a discussion this week that I'm doing something, and you're like, oh, shit. And then everyone I've talked to about is like,
oh, yeah.
Oh, shit. I've decided, because I'm a tattooed man. My whole left arm's all Egyptian shit. My whole right arm's all geometric shapes, and it's not sacred geometry.
Which is why you're going to hell.
Yeah, exactly.
I'll send you that page.
I've got my Shakespeare quote. I need to get my right sleeve finished. We're still probably 5-6 sessions away from being done.
You've got a whole big blank spot on that thing.
However, I think I'm going to get the human tattoo from Arrival. Human.
Yes.
I cannot not do it. Like
human
I,
or time.
Someone shared it on Reddit. They got it done on their wrist, and I don't like that placement whatsoever. But I immediately said, why the fuck did I not think of that? Because I would have gotten that shit done within 3 weeks of seeing that movie had I thought of it.
Yep.
But yeah, I think I'm going to get the human. It's called a logogram, but
I think that's exactly the issue is that you're like, well, why didn't I think of that? And it's because how will you know that it's not going to look like a coffee stain? Like, honestly, because they're circular.
That was the top comment on Reddit. He goes, I love this movie. I love this tattoo. You're going to be asked about a lot if you like coffee. That was the, like, top Reddit comment on the person.
It looks like a coffee stain meets an ink block test.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what are you going to do?
I don't care.
Yeah, I love it. I love the idea. In fact, when you told me, I'm the one who helped you find, like, 20 different
Some
ones.
Some dude on GitHub went through the movie...
Yeah.
And isolated all the still frames of, like, there's an explanation.
Yeah.
He isolated all the ones where there's a clear still frame that you could grab it and recreate it in Illustrator perfectly. And they also said that's what the symbol means.
Yeah. So like, no, I don't think it was just GitHub. I think
that was where they part deposited of develop, all of it.
That's where that GitHub came from, the people who developed the pictures. Yeah. Yeah, if I remember reading the article correctly.
But it doesn't have, but it's only the ones that they talk about in the film and what the meaning is. So like they have
more. There's a few more because there's a few that they have in that GitHub that does not have, that was never used in the movie. There are a few, and those were the ones that were developed behind the scenes. If I remember the article correctly, it's been, we talked about this on Monday and it's Sunday, so it's been a week.
Well, it's fucking, yes.
Yeah.
But they're high res and they're flawless.
Yeah. Oh yeah. They're high res PNG images. So you can search it. If you just search for Arrival Logogram PNG, I think it directs you directly to the GitHub.
Hmm. But it's happening. Totally happening. And I don't feel bad about it. I don't feel lame about it. Like, if I saw somebody who had the monolith tattoo from 2001 Space Odyssey, I'd be like, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Like,
I've seen that.
That's still be fucking sweet. So I'm pretty sold on this. I think it's happening. Blade Runner. Break time.
Break time. And then we'll talk about Blade Runner.
Can we just talk about Arrival some more?
No, I'm going to retire you.
This movie was absolutely nothing like what I thought it was going to be. 0% of this film is like I thought it would be.
Really?
0%. A whopping, big, fat zero. Okay.
So first off, I need to make it clear. We watched the final cut.
Yes.
And we did that because of some advice and also some negative stuff that goes with the original cut of the film. The final cut was the only one that Ridley Scott says that he had full control over.
And he straight up says, because I bought the DVD.
Yeah.
And so I watched the introduction with Ridley Scott, and he goes, this is the best.
Yes.
This is the best presentation Blade Runner could ever have.
Right.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
And he spent time on it. I wanted to mention, and I forgot to do this during the what have you been doing lately segment, that I've been communicating with somebody on Twitter by the name of Patrick Edwards. He's an author. And we were actually talking about Blade Runner. He was the one who told me, like, make sure you get the one without that stupid voiceover through the first half of the movie.
Wait, what?
That's apparently the original cut of the film.
Does he like self-narrate his own thoughts?
I don't remember. It's been a long time since I've seen the original cut. But he said, make sure you watch like the director's cut. And we were talking about it. Anyway, he had a book that came out on Tuesday. I have a copy of it. Since I've been home by myself doing nothing.
Sad, lonely Thomas.
I've been reading. I've not finished it yet, but the book is called Space Tripping and it is available and blah, blah, blah. I told him I would plug it. He's actually a really awesome dude.
You told him you would plug it and you continue to just go blah, blah, blah through the introduction of his book.
Yeah, I mean, it's good. It's funny. It's a funny, good book. If you like, okay, so this is funny, actually, that since I can go on this tangent now. It's a lot like Hitchhiker's Guide. He even, like, one of the blurbs on it is, it's like Hitchhiker's Guide, but with more alcohol references. But it's that style of humor, just a little less British and a little more crass.
Yeah.
But it, what it's about is,
if Bender was in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy,
actually, yes, like that, like, but and if Bender was just an alien instead of, you know, a robot, but yes, it is exactly like that. It's about a pretty much an alcoholic, who crashes his space truck into the side of Earth. And gets picked up by a random actual trucker because the alien thinks that the truck is another spaceship. And then hilarity ensues.
I'm going to read the fuck out of this book.
I have a copy for you. They were nice enough because we were talking about it before it dropped, and he got his publisher to send us a reader copy.
Oh, shit.
A review copy. And I thought we were recording before it came, the week before it came out. We're recording the week after it came out on Tuesday. So anyway, if you like Hitchhiker's Guide and you think that that kind of humor is funny, which I do, go get Space Trippin' by Patrick Edwards. And he was the one who told me to make sure we're watching at least the director's cut, if not the final cut.
Well, now I'm going to use the next break to look up what the hell was wrong with the original version.
Lots.
This movie wasn't anything. I kind of expected this to be somewhere between. Like
Total Recall,
The Fugitive.
Oh,
Total Recall and Tron. Like,
yeah, okay.
So if you tell me it's called Blade Runner,
mm-hmm.
and you tell me it's Harrison Ford post Star Wars but still yep. sci-fi, and that it's set in a Ridley Scott future, I'd be like, okay, I see like some Tron. I see, you know, give me back my son. I see. this is kind of where I'm at, like a little bit of Han Solo action. No, that's not what this movie is at all.
No.
This is a fucking retro future noir film.
It's a noir film.
And I did not know that.
Do you know what Shadowrunner is?
No.
Or Shadowrun.
Probably what I'm just described.
Shadowrun is a
Oh, the game.
Tabletop.
Yeah, the MM or not the MMO. It's
D&D style tabletop RPG. That I believe, if I'm not mistaken, Shadowrun pulls a lot from this, from Blade Runner.
Hmm.
Kind of a noir setting, very Asian heavy, because that's a thing in this movie. Very like detectives and gumshoes type of gameplay. But then on top of it, they go a little further and they have like internet and there's a whole thing about magic and stuff like that. But anyway, having been exposed to this after knowing about Shadowrun, kind of knew, but I haven't seen this since I was a kid.
Yeah.
And I was probably 13 or 14.
It's not.
I watched it again for this podcast.
It's a lot of walking around in silence.
It's slow. It's slower than I remembered.
It's a lot of walking around in silence. And now what has to be talked about, where he's walking around and the environment and the effects and this city that Ridley Scott crafted here.
Mm-hmm.
You can get fucking lost in it.
It's very noir. This movie would work, change the premise a little bit, and everything else is the same, and it would work. I mean, you could stick this entire set back in the 1940s and get rid of all the neon, and it'd be fine.
It's so thorough.
Mm-hmm.
It's so thorough. Like, the fact that the noodle stands are figured out, the idea of there are basement bioengineers.
Which makes sense.
Makes total sense, right? Yeah. There's basement iPhone hackers. There's basement cell phone developers. There's basement application developers. This is what we do. Developers, developers, developers. But the world is so fucking thorough.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a weird crossover point, too. I like that they have flying cars, but they don't have flying cars. Like, the cops have the flying cars. The military has the flying cars. Big Evil Corporation has the flying cars. All these poor people in Chinatown...
They don't all have flying cars.
They have
bikes. They have rickshaws.
Yeah. It's kind of all over.
Yeah.
The neon lights, that held up so much better than I would have expected.
Right. But that's the anachronistic kind of sign of the times. Yeah, that's what looked futuristic back in 1984, whenever this movie came out. But also, it holds up because everyone still has that envision of the future. That everything's neon.
Everything's going to look like fucking Tron.
Yes.
Tron or the Jetsons.
And that is an interesting, and I'm sure this was a stylistic choice. Even now you'll look at it and you'll go, that's an interesting contrast to all the dark that is in this movie. Because everything is dark in this movie, except for the lighting, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was so enthralled with the world that he created. There's so many small fucking things that he got right. I mean,
one of the scenes that sticks out to me is when he goes into I can't remember the character, the first replicant's apartment, and is like searching through him and his buddy, and they were looking for the, and they found the pictures.
Yeah.
He goes in and he turns the light on, and the light buzzes, and it's fluorescent neon.
Yeah.
And he has to tap on it in order to get it to work because it's a shitty little apartment.
Right.
But that's how it would work in real life. And that was a, that's a real, that, that makes it that much more real. Like just, yeah, just a pin, like you had said, like just a little thing that, that completely made the movie.
The big LED screens, reading out all the Coca-Cola ads.
I think that that was a add-in in later. 2007. Yeah.
Hmm.
I don't think they looked as good. Now, I watched it in HD. I rented it. And I was like, that did not exist back then.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a thing.
It's one of those things that, and this is the part of the retro future idea that I wanted to talk about. But, well, so even just the Tyrell Corporation,
yeah,
the fact that they had a building the size of the city, but the architecture shape of it had to be a pyramid style thing.
Oh, of course. There because penis.
There were obvious suggestive reasons that that's what the building is shaped like.
Mm-hmm.
But then now you find out in modern architecture, they're trying to build mega buildings. Like in Tokyo, they're going to build the world's biggest building. And it's basically going to be the size of Mount Fuji. But because of the size of it, it has to be a pyramid mountain shape. Because it literally can't support itself otherwise.
Right.
So just for him to say, all right, most technologically advanced super city in the world, company that can literally make humans.
Humanmans.
He has a crazy pyramid that he lives in. But technically, if that's the epitome of technology and finance, if he were to architecture the world's biggest building, that's what it would have to fucking look like.
Right.
So it's kind of one of those weird things that you might not realize that he fucking nailed for a million reasons he probably wasn't thinking about. I want to know why the retro future concept, everything is those shitty calculator where you can write boobies. Like, all the screens are that terrible readout. And I want to try and find an older film that does future technology. Like, why would we not have smooth custom animation for everything in the future?
Because it wasn't possible back then.
But
like, not for the budgets that they were going to use it for. I don't think.
It's just one of those things that bothers me. It bothers me.
Yeah, I know.
It bothers the fuck out of me.
You know, but that's what computers... And so two things. That's what... This is my opinion. That's what computers looked like in 1982 or 1984, whenever this movie was created, and I can't remember. So, yeah, they could have went in and CG'd something in 2007 when they were recreating or digitally remastering it. But it makes sense. That was something... That was what was available then, and it would have been recognizable to the person sitting in the seat.
So it's 2017, and if I ever test drive a car now that doesn't have a full color screen in it, I get fucking cranky. Like, not to sound as privileged as I am, but it's just one of those things. I don't know why that was missed, and I get that the budget means that you can't just develop and CGI that kind of shit in.
Yeah, it's not like now where you can have something like Minority Report where they can speculate on what computers will be 100, 200, 300 years from now.
Right.
And then digitally create it. Back then, that wasn't something you could do. In fact, it's still not always in the budget now. Look at Timer.
Yeah.
That's not what that shit would look like. No. It was just an easy way or cheap way for them to do it.
Right. So it was just the only part of the retro future thing is the LED readout screens. It just bugs me.
And I know what you're talking about. What I'm thinking of is when he was actually looking at the computers and it was the blue screen with
Enhance.
No, when he was talking, that's different, but yes.
We're going to talk about that scene.
That was weird too.
So that scene made me feel like I was going to have a fucking seizure. Who, as a man who knows Photoshop, not amazingly well, but quite well. Who the fuck navigates a picture like that? I want
select
you to
52 pull, to 48.
I want you to pull the camera slightly to the right, then recenter and zoom out real fast. Like, why? Are you trying to give yourself a fucking stroke so you can get workman's comp? Like, what are you doing? What
who,
are you doing?
Who does that through voice commands? Like, pick up a fucking mouse. Oh, wait, mice weren't a thing then.
Enhance. Enhance.
And zoom in.
Enhance. Like, just pan left. That scene made me feel like I was having a stroke. I did not enjoy that scene at all.
So what did you think of the actual replicants, the four replicants? What were their names? There was Roy.
Roy Batty. Zora.
Pris.
Pris
was Daryl Hannah, right?
Yeah. And then Rachel.
And then not Rachel.
And then the dude.
The dude, the bald dude.
I can't remember his name.
Was it Leon?
Yeah,
it
was Leon.
Leon or Leo or something. Leon reminded me a little bit of Edgar from Men in Black too. I know, or Men in Black, and I know that's
not a bad.
That's a time swap, and I'm sure they made Edgar to be like Leon, not the other way around. But that's what it reminded me of.
Yeah. So I. This is the problem for me, is this movie doesn't do a good job establishing replicants.
It does, but it doesn't.
But it doesn't. And the fact that they're all kind of fucking weird is never explained.
It is. And that's part of the whole story. They mention that they can't feel emotions.
But they're learning emotions.
They have weird emotional responses, and that's how you can tell a replicant from a human.
Yeah, and I get that. What I mean is,
explain it.
Like, there's a fucking weird face painting scene where Daryl Hannah's just spray painting her eyeballs. Like, what the why? Why was that scene there?
Because it was Daryl Hannah.
Okay, that's all fine and good.
But I think it was also to try to endear themselves to. Bio JF Sebastian, the bio dude.
I would have,
because she was basically painting herself to look like his creations.
It's all interpretation, and this movie is it's so sparse. Actually, it was a huge debate on our Facebook page almost immediately when you announced this movie.
Yes,
because so many people are like, this movie's fucking boring. I get it.
I get that why people would think it's boring.
I will not criticize anyone saying this film is boring. If I were to turn this on, had to pay attention, and I was like one beer deeper, I would have fallen asleep during this movie.
Except when the action does come, the action's pretty fucking good.
Yeah, I'll say that.
Because it's not the hero in Harrison Ford and Deckard is not overpowered. He's not...
No, he's a dude.
He's just a dude.
Yeah.
Which I must have thought differently, because I thought for sure... that he was a replicant.
So we'll talk about that too. Because that's all I knew walking into this movie is everybody's a replicant.
That's not entirely true.
It's like everybody's
true,
a Cylon. Well, I thought that was probably a spoiler, and I'm like, oh fuck, well, Harrison Ford's replicant.
I forgot he was not.
I just watched this movie. Ridley Scott likes to think he is. The writer says he's not.
Philip K. Dick, yeah.
Well, the screenplay adapted. The guy who adapted the screenplay. He says he's not. The producer says he's not. And then the fan base is split like directly 50-50. Right. Is he or is he not? And the film is too sparse in the dialogue and plot department. So if the biggest criticism is that there was some kind of weird narrated voice over the first half of the movie, it's probably to explain the gigantic fucking logical gaps that Ridley Scott left. Because it doesn't introduce this Nexus 6 concept very well. Mm-mm. It doesn't introduce replicants very well. And what I mean is that you're figuring out the quirks of people who are running from police and trying to... It's not even fucking clear that they're pursuing a longer life until they've already killed a couple people and have been very awkward on screen for a while. It's not made clear what the fuck they're up to, right? And for how well done a lot of this film is, and I give Ridley Scott a whole lot of credit for letting you figure shit out on your own, what is the fucking purpose of these replicants doping around like that?
Right.
I need to know that sooner. I need to know that. Clear as day. Beat me over the head with it. Really cheesy dad line. Like, I don't give a fuck. But that was the thing that was most frustrating to me, is this film was slow and it wasn't working to my benefit very often.
Mm-hmm.
And the only thing I needed to stay interested is what is the replicant's purpose?
Goal. But you get that, but you don't you kind of get it.
They never say it.
They do.
Say it when he kills the doctor.
Right. Well, when Pris finds, not finds, because that takes forever, but when Pris introduces JF to Body.
Oh, yeah, Roy.
Roy.
Yeah.
They tell him, you know, he says, yeah, we're going to die. We need to figure out how to live longer.
But that was like 48.
Half hour.
That was like, yeah, 45 fucking minutes into the movie after he's already been hunting them and has killed two. So.
Right.
I mean, you gotta give me a little.
That's the only problem that I have with it.
The other thing is that they never quite explained why the replicants want to come back to Earth at all. Now, these guys, once you figure out what their mission is, then it makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
But I imagine it's fucking difficult to fly from another fucking planet to come back and ask some dude, hey, can I have a year? Like, can I have some more time, please? Yeah. Thank you.
I think it is, again, implied, but not specifically stated, that they want to extend their life. And there's the fear, and the reason why the humans are so up in arms about any of them coming back is there's the fear that what they want to do is revolt.
Well, yeah, but because they're superior. In ways and measures, they're superior creations.
Sure.
I get it. I'm not selling short the... Even though this movie is slow, even though this movie is boring and it does not hold your hand, it is so fucking complex.
Yes.
Holy shit, is this movie complex. There is so much to talk about. And we will never scratch the surface.
And so much different from the source material as well.
Well, yeah, I'm sure that they had a drop in a pond and went crazy with it.
It was thematically similar, had some similar characters. I've read Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep, which is what this is based off of. It's a quick read. It's only like 150 pages, 200 pages, something like that. It's thematically similar, and some of the same things happen, but there's a lot more to it, which is odd for a novella to have more to it going on or so different. For instance, there were only four replicants in the movie, technically five if you add Rachel. There were six in the book. Rachel knew the whole time what she was. She was part of the original group. There was a wife. Deckard had a wife.
Hmm.
Deckard had a sheep. They talked more about engineered versus real animals and what a status symbol they were. Like, there was a lot more going on.
Yeah. So. It's just interesting. And, mm-hmm. and there's, I just needed, you can leave it sparse. I figured out how complex this movie was long before they started to hold my hand, but give me a little more. Like, and I imagine that when they cut this together, it was a lot like when they cut together the Dune movie, which
I've never seen.
Have you not seen? Have you read it?
I've never read it. I've heard that it's good and also really bad, but also very important and also just not my puppies.
Yeah, my pit bull is losing his shit. It's feeding time.
Yeah.
what time? I don't know. I'm trying to think of his schedule when he should have eaten, but he just went hauling ass down the hallway like, fucking food time!
Boots does that. But yeah, I've never seen Dune. All I know is that spice is life.
Spice must flow.
Spice must flow.
But it's real fucking awkward. And it'll have random scenes where you're like, what the fuck am I staring at? Why do you keep on star wiping? And
Starwipe.
They have this guy talking like this over the top to make sure ASMR. That you understand that we're going to jump like 300 pages. We're just going to jump and skip a whole bunch of important shit.
I'm hoping this makes you tingle in the back of your skull.
It's
been nice talking to you.
That's enough of that. So I could get why the studio would cut together their version and go, this doesn't make any fucking sense. I can get it. But I also would understand why Ridley Scott's like, don't fucking touch it. Like, what are you doing to my movie? So
Is that a director or a directorial control issue, or is that a I have a vision and it makes sense, and when you start moving shit, it makes no sense?
Can I be completely honest?
Yes,
I'm going to be brutally honest, and this is something I was going to say for my review period, but I'm going to say it now.
It's a control issue.
Part of me wonders. Because in recent years, Ridley Scott got so fucking sick and tired of Alien versus Predator movies, mm-hmm. he took his franchise back over, and he did Prometheus, and now he's doing
Covenant.
Now he's doing Covenant. So,
which I don't understand, but okay.
Something tells me Ridley Scott has a very...
Ridley diddly too.
Ridley Scott.
Ridley, there we go.
Ridley Scott.
Riddle me this.
Oingo Boingo Scott has... a very specific thumbprint on the sci-fi community mm-hmm. and film community that he is trying to obtain.
Yeah.
Something tells me the first cut of Blade Runner, he was totally on board with. He has to be. I mean, he has to be. He had already made Alien at that point.
Mm-hmm.
So something tells me that he made this, it was kind of a clusterfuck, and then it became a gigantic cult hit.
Right.
And I feel like in the back of his head, it's like his Alien syndrome where he's like, stop making blockbuster bullshit out of my franchise. Part of me thinks the final cut is so that he can feel better about this thing being a cult hit.
Hmm. I didn't think about that.
As part of it to me, and I mean this in the most respectful way, because it's actually good. I'm not criticizing this.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a bit of artistic ego. It's like, sure. I've been watching and consuming this thing lately, and we'll talk about it some other time because I think I'm going to do it as an assignment for you. But Edie Falco, who was in Sopranos and then she did Nurse Jackie,
yep.
was doing something more recent, and I was listening to an interview with a comedian who was on this project, and he went up to her. He goes, I just want you to know that you were so good in The Sopranos. So good.
Mm-hmm.
And I think about your performance so often, and I rewatch it every few years, and it's solely because of how great you were.
Mm-hmm.
And she was actually kind of irritated by it. Like, I have done so many more things after The Sopranos
mm-hmm.
and won more awards and made things that make my soul feel whole as an artist. Since then, thanks for the compliment, I guess. And then she just kind of like walks away. Like, it's...
But how do you...
But there's an artistic... ego, right? Artists mm-hmm. have a level of ego where it's time to walk away from a project or you want to redo it. This is why you see bands go back and like remaster or re-record some of their first albums.
Mm-hmm.
They want the thing that they're pinnacled for to hold up, and it's not holding up for them. And I have a problem with it because it feels like Bo Diddley Scott. It feels like he just tried to save this cult thing that he mm-hmm. didn't know would hold up past criticism. And he still saw the diamonds in the rough there that the fans were freaking out about.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it could be that he polished it up to make sure that it gets proper attention.
Mm-hmm.
Part of it could be that he wants the fans to really have the gem that they see.
Right.
I don't know how different the original cut is.
I don't know. I don't remember.
But the one thing I can tell you is I haven't heard a single good thing about it.
Right. I don't know. And I think that the big thing was that I kept hearing was that the voiceovers were kind of dumb and inane and didn't make a lot of sense. But I think that was it. Without it, there's a lot of silence in this movie.
Oh my God. So much negative space.
Right.
But which there's is so fine. Much to look at. There's so much to take in. The one thing in this that I loved, and I'm a big fan of gull wing doors, like on cars. I'm a fan of gull wing doors, which open up
yes.
with the like DeLoreans have DeLorean, gull wings. Yes. Yeah, they open
and
the seal and the Lamborghinis. No,
those aren't. Those are
blade doors.
Yeah.
So this movie makes so much fucking sense.
No, the old Lamborghinis had gull wing doors, didn't they?
Yeah, I think the original Countach did.
Okay.
So. But then you have the blade doors, which just go directly up from a pivot point where your leg would sit, right?
Right.
Okay. Pivot point blade doors are fucking ingenious.
Huh.
And also genius. Because what's the easiest way to get in and out of your car, Thomas, in a gigantic, overpopulated future city where there's not enough room to walk without hitting 7 people? You can't just swing your doors out wide. You got to open them shits up, son. every car in this movie had like an alternative way of opening the doors because everything in the city is so cramped.
Right.
And I'm like, what a brilliant way to think about population density and its effect on the design of our vehicles.
Right.
And I know that this is like, holy Matt, you're being a dumb fucking nerd right now.
But that shows that somebody paid enough attention to the details.
It's that thorough. I love this city. I love this environment that this is set in. It, I love Escape from New York and Escape from LA. And I like, I like Escape from LA a lot because it ridicules it. It's not supposed to be serious. It's supposed to ridicule all of those movies.
Right.
This is like that kind of Escape from New York cranked to fucking 11 with a whole bunch of shit you never thought about.
Right.
I really liked it. I mean, the world that he built, and the reason I bring this up is because I said negative space. There's not a lot of dialogue. There's no hand-holding. There's not a lot going on. But there's so much to fucking take in to get yourself into the shoes that Deckard lives in.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never had a movie give me the environment like that. Ever. I mean, this is the most in tune with a society that I've felt.
They also, you know, they spend a lot of time on the details, but they only give you the bare bones of kind of the, like you said, the plot. They allow you to fill in your own gaps by putting the details of the world in the background and saying, okay, pick up on it, which works to a point in this one, but wouldn't always work on other projects. It's just plain and simple. What do you think about the thought of this new movie coming out that's supposed to be 30 years later?
I'm not opposed to it. The ending of this movie is pretty damn wide open.
Right. Well, I mean, he kills the bad guys, and then he moves off into the sunset with Rachel, with the interesting final quote of, well, everyone's going to die. Or it's too bad she won't last or something like that.
But then none of us do.
That, yeah.
But then no one does, I think, is the line.
Right. And it's like,
I
don't know how I feel about that, to be honest.
Man, I'm not opposed to a sequel. The world has so much more to explore. It can get a lot of the technology hiccups and frustrations that I just described. I would love to see Ridley Scott, his universe.
Well, he's not the one doing it, right?
No, he's not. But his universe with a modern futurist's approach and the ability to do all this CGI of all the technology that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. Like I'll go see it. I'll go see it for sure. Just because I want to see more of this world. Like, I really do. Mm-hmm. And I also don't think that this story is over, because now you're talking about a corporation that built so many replicants that they populated 5 or 6 other planets to do colonization work, mm-hmm, and grunt work and send resources back home. They're barred from coming to the planet. And the dude who runs that company was slaughtered. So now there's a giant power vacuum in the organization that's supposed to be populating and running all the other planets. It's a huge plot gap.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's the next 30 whatever years in that universe have got to be bonkers. Just bonkers with everything getting figured out.
Well, let's explore that a minute. So, it's 30 years later. These replicants were designed to live 4 years and then just shut down, as what happened
with replicants rights. Hashtag replicants rights.
Get woke.
Hashtag replicants march.
Are you done, like, with the dumbness?
I'm wearing my bio pussy hat today.
Oh my god, I can't stand you. I can't deal with you.
Oh, calm down, you SJW. You'll be all right.
I am holding your robot hand.
Oh my, really?
Yeah,
really.
Travis McElroy thing.
Oh boy. Oh boy.
So what I did is I bought a button from the Travis McElroy's online store, where a portion of the proceeds go to the ACLU, whatever, that's not important. But it says, it's a picture of two hands, and they're holding each other, and it says, hashtag I am holding your hand, which is something that he started during the, I guess the election cycle or shortly before. And it was supposed to, it started originally with the bathroom laws and just kept getting bigger and bigger. And that's, I had extra $5 and I'm donating something to somebody.
That was $5?
Well, yeah.
The ACLU has all of Susan Sarandon's money. They don't need your money.
It was also to support Travis because I'm a huge McElroy fan. Anyway, replicant rights.
Replicant rights. Oh, boy.
I forget where I was going with all that.
They only last 4 years.
Yeah,
they're going to go 30 years in the future.
Right, but it's very, I mean, it's implied that Deckard is possibly a replicant. So is he? Is he such an advanced, and is Rachel such an advanced version? Because we know for sure Rachel is one.
So I'm
but
trying.
But she's coming back for the next movie, right?
I'm trying to decode. I'm still
looking
trying
the shit up right now.
Well, I'm still trying to decode what the meaning of a unicorn is in this film, because the reason I say that is they show Deckard have a dream where a unicorn runs through the forest.
Yes,
and he's really shook by it. It doesn't sit well. He's really obsessed with it. And at the end of the movie, his friend leaves Gaff leaves an origami unicorn.
Which he's been doing tiny little
he's
origami
He's been doing
fingers.
Little origami all over.
But I think that was supposed to be, I know what you're dreaming, or I know what you're thinking.
Yeah, and so the question is, does the unicorn represent Rachel? She is the last unicorn. She's the one that could last. Right? She's the unique one. She's special. Or does it show that Gaff is in his head and knows what memories and dreams have been planted there, and that Deckard was Nexus 6 version 1.0, and then the Nexus program degraded over time?
Right.
They hint at that in other ways because they show his apartment is just littered with photos of family,
mm-hmm.
which that's kind of how they push memories into replicants or reinstill, you know, kind of instill them.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me sees how Harrison Ford could be a replicant. But I almost, based on the way that he carries himself, the way that he discusses things, the way he reacts to situations and the logical choices he makes, the fact that he is a Blade Runner. I like the idea that he's not a replicant, and the fact that Rachel is a unicorn and it's been his job to find and retire them. He finds the unicorn and saves it.
Right. Which is what you should do.
Conservationally. That to me is a more, it's a more logical way to go with it. And the fact that Gaff says, yeah, you know, it's too bad she's not going to last, but then again, none of us do. He's even hinting at the fact, like, dude, I know that you're going to protect her. Go fucking enjoy it. Like, you don't have to kill
her. You don't have a whole lot of time left.
You don't
anyway.
It's not like you're giving up on your job and you're not defending the world from replicants. And, you know, it's going to end. It's all going to expire.
Right.
Go be. Go do. Enjoy, save the unicorn. I to me, that feels like a more cohesive point than finding out that he is a replicant and he's escaping with his own type. I don't know, man. I've really been thinking about this.
And there's the alternate, and I read this earlier this week when I had watched this, that Deckard's not a replicant, but Gaff is. And that was Gaff telling him, hey, there are more of us out here than you think there are. And
oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. He, the fact that he says it's a shame she won't last, but, you know, none of us do, or
yeah,
or however it's actually worded. And I feel bad that I don't know that quote. But he's telling them, like, eventually you would have had to have hunted me because I know that I am a replicant. Just go. You don't have to kill anyone. Because we'll just die and it will be okay.
Yeah, I
So taking that and going digging into the theme of it, it's like, you know, do you have to hate someone because they're different? No, because if you just leave it alone, probably everything will just turn out okay for everyone involved. I mean, not to put my social justice warrior badge back on, but is that not the
thematic? It's just like having a socially awkward neighbor.
Right? You leave me alone, I'll leave you alone. You could do your weird shit and I'll do my weird shit. That's kind of with the message, the end message of this movie.
Yeah, but what if your real estate value went down because there were too many replicants nearby? Like, you know,
I'm trying to hate you. You're turning me into Sean, man. Don't do that.
No, you are Sean, whether you like to admit it or not.
No, I'm not. I'm
you
not.
Immediately go to the sex joke. You immediately go blue, and
I don't go up in arms when somebody
you're socially defensibly confused sometimes. But it's endearing to me. I'm not criticizing you. It's endearing to me.
fuck you.
Oh, goodness.
Love you.
Let's take our last break.
Yeah, let's. And then
I got to reckon with this train wreck of a movie. Okay. Pocket doors.
Oh, wait.
How cool would it be if a car had pocket doors?
No, you need that space for
something.
And
then it does the Star Trek.
Only if it makes that sound. Oh, here's the thought. Katy Perry for Rachel in the sequel.
Is that who it is?
That was somebody that was being shopped around. I don't know if they
actually probably can't act at all.
She was on SNL. She did all right.
I'll say this. I like Katy Perry like a lot. She doesn't have a good speaking voice. If that makes any sense.
I get that.
So I don't know if that I would like to see her act and stuff. We're taking a break.
Okay.
Tommy, you're a firework. Tommy, you're a replicant. Damn it. The question of whether Deckard is intended to be a human or a replicant has been an ongoing controversy since the film's release.
Mm-hmm.
Both Michael Dealey and Harrison Ford wanted Deckard to be human, while Hampton Fancher preferred ambiguity. Ridley Scott has confirmed that in his vision, Deckard is a replicant. Now, here's
the sequel is supposed to answer the questions. They've not said one way or another how it's supposed to go.
I prefer ambiguity. I like that there are arguments here. Mm-hmm. And if they walk into the sequel being, you know, carrying a big stick, I'm not going to be too stoked. There's a fuckload of ambiguity in Blade Runner. That's, to me, this film is a masterclass.
It questions what humanity is.
Well, it's a masterclass, and I give it its credit, in exactly that. Sci-fi exploration of meaning, purpose, and ambiguity. And I...
What it means to be human, man. Right? What it means to be human, man.
We're going to get to a point, we're already fighting with it now, with what synthetic life is going to mean and feel like. I mean, when we cloned sheep way back, it was like, holy fuck, we cloned a sheep.
Dolly, yeah.
We cloned it. We cloned it. Do we make sure that it's raised just like the first Dolly the sheep?
Which is an ethical argument.
Do we give it different rights and treatment because it's not natural life, it's synthetic life? Like, what do we do?
Yeah.
I
remember that. I remember that happening in the early 90s. And there being a lot of discussion on whether or not the world would end because we stepped into God's playhouse.
Yes.
And I remember thinking, are you fucking stupid? Like,
well, and then OJ Simpson caught everybody's attention, and right, we talked about something else for a little while.
We got distracted as we tend to do.
Yeah. We've not
cloned a human yet, right?
No, because the Raelians said that they did it. You remember the Raelians? They got their 5 minutes of fame. Fucking weird poncho wearing idiots. You're one step below Scientology, Raelians. And you used cloning as your biggest PR campaign ever. Fucking loonies. You forgot all about the Raelians, didn't you?
I did.
You did. I knew you did.
Heaven's Gate, dude.
Why is this movie called Blade Runner?
I don't know.
Thank you. There's no fucking purpose for him to be called a Blade Runner. What is a blade? What's a blade?
No, they don't talk about any of that.
What?
And it's not called that. I'll tell you why it's called Blade Runner. And I think Blade Runner was the name of the what these guys were in the original book. And I think it was just kind of a, oh, that sounds cool and futuristic kind of thing. But
I just think a Squidward from SpongeBob. Future.
when you were looking, would you have liked this movie as much? And don't say it doesn't matter. If it was called Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep?
No.
Right.
John Carter from Mars. I'm not seeing it.
Right? Which is why I think part of the reason why Stranger in a Strange Land has never been made, but has been copied
multiple times. Let me clarify. I didn't see John Carter because it was John Carter. Like, it was called John Carter.
Right.
If it was called John Carter from Mars, I'd been like, fuck yeah, I'm seeing that movie.
No, I still don't think I would have seen
it. I mean, they should have come up with a third title.
Renamed it something different, right? And that gets really tough when you're dealing with books. Now, the nice thing... I'm sorry, I just burped
Now,
all
when
over.
You listen back to this episode...
I'll remember.
You're going to make yourself sick.
That wouldn't be the first time. Excuse me. The nice thing here is that this was one of the first, if I remember correctly, Philip K. Dick books that were turned into a successful movie. And it got him a lot of attention, or at least his stories a lot of attention. And now we've done a bunch of them. But most of them keep the name, like The Minority Report, that sort of thing. If anything, it calls to mind that this guy was an expert in his field in heavily themed sci-fi, not just, you know, trash novels.
He spent a long time trying to get that damn whale. That's a Moby Dick joke.
I get it. That was Herman Melville.
I am Ahab. I liked Blade Runner. I liked it a whole lot. The hyper fandom, however, officially
82, not 84. I keep saying 84. It's 82.
Officially does not make sense to me. Like, it doesn't make sense. I get it, and it does, but it doesn't. So like, what's a good example? Adam Savage from Mythbusters.
Yeah.
Obsessed with Blade Runner. Loves Blade Runner. Yeah. He's a special effects guy. I get why he loves this movie. I do not know why this has a gigantic cult following that's as detail obsessed and oriented as somebody like that. This movie feels so sparse and dated. All of the criticisms I've ever heard of it are 100% true. All of the praises I've heard of it are 100% true.
Mm-hmm.
But I cannot walk away from this film calling myself a Blade Runner fanboy and like being obsessed with this universe.
So that was another reason why once I found out that you hadn't seen Blade Runner and then you realized it and you started kind of trying to shove it down my throat, like, when are we going to do Blade Runner? Can we do Blade Runner? It was like, I don't think you're going to want this as much as you say you do. Once you've done it, you're going to be like, I could have waited a little longer for Blade Runner. So is that true?
I don't think waiting 5 more years would have changed my appreciation of it.
Uh-huh.
I'm walking away from this movie with a lot less than I thought I was going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And a whole lot of things I never expected. And I'm conflicted. I don't know how I feel about it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how I feel about it.
So rate it.
I don't know if a 24-hour digestion period is good enough. But
that's your own fault. I tell you to watch these a long time before.
No, you and I both know if I watch the assignment in the day or two after you give it to me and then we come in to talk about it on a Sunday, mm-hmm. I am going to have a fucking awful conversation about that piece of media. It's going to be terrible. So what do you want? Do you want a good podcast? Do you want me to watch things when it's not the night before? So that you can blow my phone up with 5 billion texts in a row.
Grade it. Can we grade it? Can we do that thing that we do?
If you were on the outside looking in and couldn't find what to appreciate, this movie is...
I would be called a stalker and you would file charges.
This would be like a C-.
Okay.
I want to land on like a B. A B to kind
you're
of a B.
You're trying to push it in.
No, it's not an A. It's not an A. It's not it's
no,
not
No, but
A.
you it sounds like your knee-jerk reaction is, oh, it's a C. But you're trying to give it credit for being so it's okay if you say this is a C because and it doesn't deserve even any more than that even though it's so highly
But I just
lauded.
But that's not it. That's not it. If you were I could never sit down and flip this on TV. It's so fucking uneventful. I would much rather flip on anything else.
Yeah.
I can't. This is not. No. This is like I'm in a mood to watch Blade Runner. No, because the thing is that sometimes I would say, oh, well, the plot and the execution is a C-, but this and this and this are an A. And I can't do that because all of the filler and all of the space in between all the things.
God, I hate daylight savings time. Go on. I'm sorry. I'm trying to stay awake.
It creates a universe that has to be reckoned with. Like it's so fucking commanding.
Mm-hmm.
It's so fucking commanding.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen a movie in your face with their environment and existence like this ever, ever. And it's engaging. It's enthralling. It's thorough. It's flush. It's yeah. I mean, that's so masterclass, it makes the whole film better and more bearable. And that shit holds up, too. It does not look bad. It looks good. It looked real good. And the themes are so dense and specific, but ambiguous. And the story is so great.
Mm.
But the execution is difficult. It's difficult. This feels like it could have been done better.
Don't tell Ridley Scott that.
But that's the thing. That's what I'm saying. As I feel like he sought this out. It didn't go quite as he wanted. The cut that was put into theaters wasn't quite what he wanted. The diamond in the rough that it was, people are seeing it. And I don't disagree with the fact that this is on like the top sci-fi film lists and all that kind of shit. I get it. But I think Ridley Scott kind of wanted to save his ass a little bit and make sure that there was a version of this movie out there that would stand the test of the time a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't, I would argue that I bet you he would go back in time and shoot this movie differently.
Yeah,
it's
maybe.
One thing to do a different cut. It's one thing to do in enhancements. It's another thing when you would have to reshoot the fucking movie.
Right.
Do
you think he'd streamline it? That's what I feel like. I feel like there were some decisions that were made from an art standpoint that didn't make a lot of sense that if you watch it now, you're like, oh, we cut this piece out and we would say this so that this made sense later on.
Yeah, I feel like Ridley Scott, it was in dire need of reshoots for this film. Mm. The studio forced together a version that everyone could at least agree on. And then he went back and edited it into something that would hold up.
Gotcha.
It could mean the phrase hold up for him, hold up for fans, hold up for time. Hold up for future generations, whatever, right? But I feel like this film could have been just scrapped and reshot and so, probably been better.
So the difference between this and Highlander is Highlander was still kind of fun and this was kind of artsy and just needed some tweaking.
Where Highlander, you could just laugh at how ludicrous things had become and just be like, he fucking blew that up and it blew up the wrong direction.
Right.
Like, it blew up at him. Like, what is... That's not how physics work. And you just laugh. But then the Kurgan is so evil and twisted, you're like, fuck, the Kurgan.
Mm-hmm.
Blade Runner was frustrating. It was frustrating. It was... It was way more frustrating than I expected it to be.
That was the biggest thing, is that you had... To me, the one thing about this movie that...
I love noir. That's the thing, is...
I don't mind the slow. What really kills me is you get to the end and it's the final climactic battle between
and it's just awkward.
Body and Deckard and and then it's over. It's just kind of fizzles out.
It's just an awkward fight. Like, it's an awkward, he's howling like a dog. And they're fighting, but they're not fighting. Yeah. And he broke his two fingers, which I fucking cringed. Ugh. But then he sticks the nail through his own hand to resist the death of his arm, I guess.
Yes.
Like, it doesn't. So what's the point of psyching yourself up and psyching yourself out and sticking a nail through your arm to keep yourself awake? And then it's so anticlimactic. Yeah, you just slump over on the roof.
To save your antagonist and then die. Like,
I just don't get it.
Time to die.
It's frustrating. This movie was frustrating. And I really feel like this is one that if they said they were going to remake and that the integrity that the fans know and love was the most important thing of the remake,
mm-hmm.
I actually think I'd be on board.
So speaking of another Philip K. Dick movie, have you seen Total Recall, the original?
No.
Have you seen the remake of Total Recall?
No.
See, that's one. That's one that they did and they remade. And I'm like, oh, this is the same story, but it's two completely different movies.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Yeah. The original is kind of campy and fun, and the ending is ambiguous, as is common in Philip K. Dick stuff. And the remake is, there's less question, and it's a bit more flashy and action-heavy, which is interesting because the original was a Schwarzenegger film. So that might be one to go on because I've
get to the future.
I'm from Mars. That's one of those.
Arnold Carter from Mars.
That's one of. Oh, that snuck up on me.
I love that. It's good. I'm so tired. I'm making dumb jokes that work, but you're so tired they take two extra seconds to land.
That might be one for the future, but we can't go on this. I'll say when I rewatched this, it was even more slow than I remembered it. It was still good. It's still a good film. I get why people like it. Not for me.
Blade Runner? Oh, Blade Total
Runner.
Recall.
Blade Runner. No, I totally enjoy Total Recall. That is just...
So Blade Runner, you don't weird. Even like...
It wasn't... No, and that's why it took me so long. Like, it's not that I don't like it. It's just not for me. It's... I get it, but it wasn't enough.
I understand why when I say 2001 A Space Odyssey is the best film humanity will ever make, people go, that movie's fucking dumb and boring.
Mm-hmm.
I never once...
It has pacing problems.
...ever will say that your opinion is wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It's like sitting through a paint drying session.
Yes, I'll tell you it that is. I like 2001. I like when it gets interesting towards the middle of the movie. Even
I like the intro too, but that's because I know cinematography and Stanley Kubrick is on another plane.
I get that, but as a casual movie watcher, not a student of the craft.
Without extra education that I paid thousands of dollars for, I would not have that appreciation.
It's interesting, and I know about it, but I don't go looking for that, and I would say, it's kind of slow, and there's some pacing issues, but I like that movie. But I could fast forward through the first 20 minutes of it to get to the meat of it.
I think Blade Runner that's where I'm at. It's 2001 is my gold standard, and on the other side of the fence, people who say that movie is not worth it.
Mm-hmm.
I'm kind of looking at Blade Runner, and I'm on the fence, where I understand and see what people love so much about it and why it's acclaimed and probably going to become a very important film in the next 150 years. I mean, we're growing body parts and limbs now in labs and then attaching them to humans and they work.
Humans.
It's a thing. It's a thing that we're doing now.
Yes.
I just see where the problems of Blade Runner make it so hard to be in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's, I'll see the sequel, man. I really want to see the sequel. I'm interested. It's not that this is a story I don't care about. This isn't what I expected at all. And I would have been totally cool with it being a noir. When I realized it was a noir, I started to get more excited. But then I proceeded to continue to get let down. And I don't know. Man, it's so complicated. I have so many complicated feelings about this fucking movie.
It's Logan's Run. It kind of is Logan's Run when you think about it.
I don't know what Logan's Run is.
Logan's Run is about...
Isn't Harrison Ford in that too?
I don't remember. I don't remember who's in Logan's Run. It's been a long time. But that's about killing old folks, basically. Preserving the population. what's that called when you kill the oldest, or you send the oldest people in your village to the woods to die so that the youngest people have enough resources to
live? Logan's Run.
Yeah, right. That's what it's called. that's what it's about.
No, I don't know.
I keep wanting to say gerrymandering, but that's not it.
That's not it. I think it's generation. It's like, it's a play on generation aside. Like,
it's, yeah, okay. Gericide.
Yeah, something like that.
Anyway. So, what's the thing? Like, we can get, we're over Blade Run. What's the thing?
Oh, what are we doing next?
Yeah.
Like,
this has gone on way too long.
I would like to
Tom and Ted hate us.
I would like to hop on the let's make everything live action bandwagon. And Beauty.
I'm not doing Beauty and the Beast.
I'm not making you do Beauty and the Beast. I'm making you do one that. So I'll admit out loud, I'm frustrated that Disney's just live action making all of their movies now. I'm frustrated about it. It's kind of annoying. Like, my wife is overly excited for Beauty and the Beast, and I don't think it looks great.
Oh, and with the controversy that's going on right now.
Well, why did you just shove a gay character into a movie?
He was always gay.
That's all fine and good, but that doesn't...
They're making it dumb.
Pronounced to capitalize on the moment, and they want the attention, and they want to use the social element to make it look at how fucking current Disney is. Like,
that's the thing.
It's unnecessary.
Here's the thing. Let me talk about this, because you haven't even announced what the fucking movie is, but let me talk about this Belle thing, or the Beauty and the Beast thing.
I'm okay with it, but I'm not okay with it.
I was just having this conversation, right? I don't care. I'm a straight white dude, right? I understand that there is a subset of my culture, straight white dudes, that don't like anything different. I am an enlightened person. I don't care if you're brown. I don't care if you're polka dotted. I don't care if you're anything.
Get your stripey bullshit out of here, though.
Well, fuck the stripes. But I don't care. I don't care if you are a dude that sucks dick. I don't care if you're a chick that likes the coos. It's just the dirtiest thing I think I've ever said. I don't care if you used to be a dude. I don't care if you used to be a female.
We got it.
I don't
You voted
care.
For Bernie Sanders.
No,
I get it.
No, I didn't. I
oh, you
don't,
couldn't because the Democrats wouldn't let him run for president. So
I don't
keep going.
Care. And I don't understand why people do. If you're on the conservative side and you're like, oh my God, there's gay people. What? My kids might get gay on them. It doesn't work that way, first of all. And secondly, if you were teaching your kids the way that you feel religiously, then you shouldn't have to worry about your kid picking up the gay.
So my criticism of it is, why would you take probably the best Disney film ever?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Beauty and the Beast is probably the best one, if we're being real.
It's my favorite princess movie,
it's
for sure.
It's got to be the best one.
It's my favorite princess movie, yes.
But why? It's one thing to make it live action, and you're already going to kind of push some of that magic and gold. I mean, it's all stolen from Hans Christian Andersen anyway.
Right.
But my thing is... defend that artistic choice.
Mm-hmm.
That's where I'm coming from, right? So I was just...
Here, I'll defend it for you. Money.
Yeah.
End of story.
And that's the thing that pisses me off. That's the part that pisses me off.
And Hollywood loves a remake.
You're going to go back and you're going to bastardize this thing for money, and you're going to throw the great, you know, feminist warrior that is Emma Watson into it, and all this good stuff. And I do like her. I do like her. She wavers a bit on her concept of feminism more often than she's willing to admit, and she likes to try and call people out for it. And I don't fucking put up with that. Don't redefine what you're defending all the time and then try and put everybody else on blast. But one of the best things my audio engineering teacher ever told me is, he goes, you can do whatever you want in the studio, but when you're done and you hand something over and someone criticizes it, you better be able to defend what you fucking did. If something is overcompressed and sounds ugly in the middle of a beautiful mix, you better be able to fucking explain why with a reason that sounds better than I turned the knobs. Right? Right? And he used a really good example as he said, I was brought on board of this toy firm who was making a talking toy. And they said, here's all the sounds and all the samples and all the speaking lines. Mm-hmm. We need you to get recorded, get put into a lower bit rate so that it'll fit on this size memory card in that toy.
Mm-hmm.
And he got in the studio and he got all the audio cut and he started doing all of his cuts and his reductions. We call it the dither process.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to make the files more manageable.
Yeah.
He got halfway done with the project. He called the manufacturer and said, you cannot put that memory size in that toy.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot do it. And they said, well, this is going to cost us, you know, a dollar more per unit to manufacture. And you're just some guy that we hired contractually to cut some audio for us. You don't know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And so what he did is he sent them 5 files and said, this is what this toy is going to sound like. And they said, oh, shit. He goes, now, I'm telling you once more, upgrade the memory inside the toy,
mm-hmm.
or I will walk away from this project because I will not have my fucking studio's name on it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, he could have made the quick dollar, and he could have just said, fuck it, it's going to be a shitty sounding toy. Here's your audio.
Mm-hmm.
He fought with the company that gave him a lot of money.
Integrity.
It, for the artistic integrity.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot... And I'm going to see the film and I'm going to give it its fair shot. But on the surface, when you tell me that you have a feminist warrior is recast as Belle, and then you throw a whole new song and dance number into a film that's renowned for its music and soundtrack.
Aren't they all doing that? Like
adding extra shit.
Yeah. Cinderella had different songs and things. And I still haven't seen Cinderella. Is it Cinderella that you're assigning me?
No.
Okay.
But my big thing is I want to grab the Disney producer by the neck and go, defend it.
Mm.
Defend it for a reason other than you want to posture, or like, what does it serve to the story?
Mm-hmm.
What does it serve?
Well, I'll withhold that. I will watch it because I have enough people in my family that want to see
it. Well, I'm going to see it.
And I'm curious about it, but...
On the surface, it's indefensible to me.
On the surface, it's a money grab.
Yeah.
To which I will gladly give them my money. I did hear Cinderella was good, but they didn't add anything to the story. It was just an updated version of the same story that you've seen updated 50 times.
Well, we're gonna do Jon Favreau's Jungle Book. Jon Favreau just did a live action and CGI.
The dude from Chef?
Yep.
Okay.
They just had him do the Jungle Book.
You mean Happy from what fucking movie is he, comic book movie is he from?
Oh yeah, I don't remember.
Was that Green Lantern?
But he's the dick. He's the dick husband in I love you, man.
Yeah, he was the dude from Iron Man too, right?
Yeah.
Jon Favreau.
So
yeah, he's an actor who has made it into. Like super directorial land, yeah, right?
And he's good.
Cool.
He's very good.
Right. I didn't know he did Jungle Book.
He did the Jungle Book. Rudyard Kipling has a very special place in my heart. The Jungle Book has a very special place in my
Rudyard
heart.
Rudyard or Rudyard?
It doesn't matter. I'm American. I want to do the Jungle Book, but I want to talk about this let's remake it every 20 years thing. I feel like most of our conversation probably just got sucked up by the... They added a gay character to Beauty and the Beast for no apparent fucking reason.
He was always gay, is what I'm trying to tell you.
That's fine that he's gay, but the whole marketing campaign can't be that we went back in time and we outed him.
Like, I just listened to an episode of Intero Bang with Tybee and Travis, or with Travis and Tybee, and they were talking about the whole announcement. And the thing that they have a problem with, which I understand, is the specific wording of, this is an exclusively gay moment. Like, what the fuck is exclusively gay?
You gotta be gay for this 2 minutes of this film.
This is just for the gays. Like, everybody else just turn away. And... Pink and glitter! And then it's over.
I mean, I don't understand.
Did I blow out the mic for that?
Probably.
Oh, that's awesome.
You blew out the mic with
Yay!
Glitter. You blew out the mic thinking about blowing mic.
I blew it.
That was really? A good joke. Fuck you just you. Fucking I know, stood I got right it. On top nope. of.
I,
you walked right over it. It was good. It was a Thomas joke right there. All right. Yeah, I want to do The Jungle Book because actually...
Okay. I've never seen it.
I saw it last year. It is, I would argue, very, very surprisingly good.
It's apparently on Netflix right now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And then I want to talk about them just constantly re-churning my childhood for some extra profits. NegOneCast, Facebook, Twitter, email, Gmail. Yep.
Gmail is the email.
Neozaz.com.
It's the reason for the season.
Wonderful network.
Yes.
Special shout out at the end this week to the Bad Advice Show, who did a ladies night episode.
Yes. And I was part of it.
He had a full female panel, and
they had to split it into two parts because it got so crazy.
It got so nuts. The audio quality gets crazy because it's five women and two dudes just screaming at a lot of points and having five conversations at the same time. However, some of the questions and points that got brought up are so awesome. It is so worth listening to.
Well, we both, you did not get one on this one. You got one on the one before that.
I have two questions coming into episode two. I have two questions that are going to be part of episode two.
Episode two dropped.
Did it really?
Yeah, I was listening to it on the way. I have one, and mine was an audio one. I know that you had one on the one that...
Mine was written.
That had the half audio was dropped, the one before the ladies' night episodes. But I sent mine in, and I was so pissed off at Adam because it was the first thing that I had ever done with my recording stuff, and I spent some time putting it together and making sure, because I didn't remember everything that you had taught me, and I put it all together, and I had this nice little audio file. What's he fucking do? What does Adam fucking Worth do? He plays it over a speaker, and it sounds like fucking shit because he's playing it from his computer.
It's just because you were talking in it.
I was so pissed. The girls like my questions, so.
The
women's.
That episode one absolutely
was funny. Second one is actually really funny, too.
I'm sure the second one's going to be even better because I know some of the questions that are coming. That's awesome. So shout out to them, and Adam, we love you. That's it. We're done. Jungle Book.
1 week. See you next week.
It's Ben.
What? Damn it.
Now I can't even claim that because Comedy Bang Bang does it all the fucking time.
Hit the fucking button.
Cause they do It's Ben.
Oh my God. And then hit the button. I can't even watch Comedy Bang Bang.
I'm trying to make this podcast as long and pointless as Blade Runner.
But
fuck. Where's the? There we go. Button.
NeoZaz.com